Ladies and gentlemen of America, tonight Sears Roebuck and Company celebrates its 50th anniversary by presenting the first of a new series of programs dedicated to you, the people of America.
Then and now, a panorama of American destiny, a review of the past 50 years through which Sears Roebuck and Company has proudly grown up with America. Each week, then and now, we'll recreate for you in music, in drama, in song, the unforgettable events of the past half century. Each week, famous motion picture stars, composers, singers, the world's greatest talent will be brought into your home by Sears Roebuck and Company, the store where all America shops. Sears Roebuck and Company is proud to present on tonight's premiere broadcast,
Mr. Robert Montgomery, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer star, Miss Constance Bennett of 20th Century Fox, Mr. Fred Stone, beloved idol of Broadway, Miss Paula Stone, Hollywood's new starlet, Mr. Walter Hampton, dean of the American Theater, and tonight, for the first time on the air, a dramatization from the novel, which is thrilling hundreds of thousands of Americans, Gone with the Wind. Today, hundreds of newspapers told you about values, which are the flower of 50 years of merchandising. They spoke of four-star values, anniversary specials, of values which mark a new era in the history of buying and selling. You will find them in Sears' 500 retail stores to mark the golden anniversary. Today, the famous Sears catalog shines a little more brightly in millions of American homes, where it has made the good things of life a little more bountiful, a little more accessible.
America saw two miracles that year. One was the Statue of Liberty, which France sent us for our 100th birthday. The other was the electric light, a young inventor by the name of Edison, installed in the uplifted hand of the Goddess of Liberty. Let us look back into the life of this man of destiny to whom America and the world owe so much.
Mr. Walter Hampton plays the role of Thomas Alva Edison.
In his dim-lit laboratory stands the genius Thomas Edison. He's in his early 30s, permanently deaf as the result of a beating received when a small boy. His assistant, John Croisi, enters the laboratory as Edison busily tinkers with a curious-looking machine.
What is it you are working on now, Mr. Edison?
Just a minute, sir, John. Now, listen.
In boil over a drum. Little tube, parchment diaphragm, a steel needle.
Curious looking, isn't it? I think I got it, though, this time.
What in heaven's name is it, Mr. Edison?
I can't hear you. I'm not looking at you, John.
But,
If you want to know what it is, I'll tell you. It's something I've been working on in secret for a long time. It's a small prison.
Prison?
That's right. For locking up the human voice and preserving it for posterity.
I don't get you, sir.
Go on. Tell me this is impractical, too. This is a little device that's going to talk.
Oh, but such a thing is not practical, sir. A table can't talk.
There are lots of things you don't believe possible, John. You know, for instance, that in this chair here, is enough energy to run a whole factory? Can you tell me what makes the little animal called man go round, eh? What's the secret of life? Who knows it, Croisi? You? Me? No one. That's why it's so fascinating. Do you realize what it will mean to the world if we can capture the human voice and keep it in a little box and have it talk whenever we want it to? Do you realize what that will mean? Don't think anything is impossible, Croizier. Now, just one more tightening of this little bolt. There, I'm ready, John. Watch me. I turn this little shaft here, and I talk. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. Now let's see whether all my effort has gone for naught. I turn the shaft backward to the starting point, adjust the tube, and once more turn the handle. I guess you're right, Croizier. It's impractical. I guess you can't harness sound.
Oh, but, Mr. Edison, it does work. I heard it. Just what you said into it. The same voice, the same things. It talks.
You are not lying to me, Croizier. Oh. I heard nothing.
Oh, no, Mr. Edison. I would never lie to you.
You really heard it? The same words?
Yes, sir, the same words.
How do I sound, John?
Oh, wonderful, sir. That machine is a success. The most amazing, the most wonderful thing that has ever been created, sir.
Ah, no, Croizier. More amazing and wonderful is the thing God created. Man.
Immortal Thomas Edison, the deaf man who made a machine talk, the genius who gave the world light, the wizard who performed incredible miracles, Thomas Edison whose dreams have profoundly affected the destiny of the world.
The 90s.
The gay 90s, when bicycles were built for two. There were no movies in those days, but there were minstrel shows. It is late evening in the spring of 1896. Creaking along a dirt road in Louisiana are the red and gold wagons of the McIntyre and Heath Minstrels. Their destination is the little village of Old Town, just over the next rise. Atop the lead wagon sits Joe Hayden, a member of the company, Theodore Metz, conductor of the minstrel band, and Jim McIntyre.
Well, boys, we're coming into Old Town soon. I wish you boys would have that song ready so we could introduce it at tomorrow night's opening.
Have it ready, all right, Mac.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that. It's the title that's worrying us.
Well, we'll call it the song without a title, if necessary.
Well, I don't know.
That wouldn't be so good. Say, look down there in the valley. Do you see it?
Why, it's a fire. Part of the town is on fire.
Well, it'll be a hot time in Old Town tonight, all right.
My goodness, Mac. That's it. That is it.
What's it? Have you gone crazy?
The title, Mac. You have given us the title.
What title?
Hot time in the Old Town tonight.
When you hear them bells go ding-ling-ling, all join round and sweetly you must sing. And when the verse stands through and the chorus all join in, there'll be a hot time in the Old Town tonight.
Here it began. An obscure little town in Louisiana was the first to throb to the catchy and tuneful notes of Hot Time in the Old Town. For 2 years, the minstrels toured the country singing it, popularizing it wherever they went. But it needed the sudden shock of a tragic event to lift this song to its place in the pattern of America's destiny.
U.S. Naval Base reporting. The United States battleship Maine was blown up in Havana Harbor last night. The circumstances of the explosion are extremely mysterious, and the government has ordered an immediate investigation.
The blue-shirted volunteers of 98 marched off to Cuba to the tune of Hop Time in the Old Town. They whistled it in their jungle camps. They sang it as they charged up San Juan Hill. They made it the song of the Spanish-American War. The eyes of America turned toward the St. Louis Exposition in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Louisiana Purchase. Thousands upon thousands of people crammed their way into the fairgrounds that hot summer, eager to see how far America had come.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you is the famous Winton automobile, holder of the world's long-distance record of over 1,000 miles.
Yes, me, tain't practical.
One moment, old-timer. Yes? This car drove all the way from New York just to come to the exposition.
Well, I bet the horse got tired pulling it.
In spite of the derision which greeted the automobile in 1904, it is indeed here to stay. And its coming developed an industry which was to be gigantic even among the colossal industrial combinations of those early 1900s. This was an age of leisurely living, of a cold bottle and a bird, picture hats and hobble skirts, when the haunting waltzes of the Castle House Orchestra gave way to the toe-tickling rhythms of ragtime. The tempo quickened. Life was gay, carefree. The world danced the turkey trot on the edge of... Within 3 short years, America came of age. The World War.
Come in.
Mrs. Alice Gresham?
Yes?
A telegram.
Oh, I don't have my glasses with me. Would you mind reading it, son?
Oh, sure. It's from the Secretary of War.
Yes.
Well, he says, regret to inform you that your son, Ben Gresham, was the first American soldier to be killed in the World War. I deeply sympathize with you.
The Jazz Age. Post-war frenzy, crossword puzzles, Rudolph Valentino, bell-bottom trousers, King Tut, the Channel Swimmers, speakeasies, radio. And out of the restless moil of 20th century turbulence came the story of a beautiful friendship and a heartrending tragedy.
Can't tell how Daddy is yet, Bill. We're hoping for the best.
Listen, how about this show of his, 3 tears? I read in the paper that they're going to call the whole thing off.
That's what was decided last night, Bill.
Well, you tell those birds in New York that I'm going to fly in from California to pinch hit until Fred gets well. Tell him might not dance as funny, but... I can sing as loud as Fred. And you tell Fred not to take it so hard, because, shucks, he'll be up and dancing again no time.
Thanks, Bill. I will.
The nation thrilled as Will Rogers rushed to New York to fill in for his injured friend. America loved Will Rogers as it never loved anyone else. America was unprepared for that tragic summer day when Will Rogers flew off to a final landing.
This is Fred Stone speaking, friend. This is Will Rogers' spot, but nobody can pinch hit for Will Rogers. For if Will was here, he'd be on this program. The panorama of the America of the last 50 years just has to include Will. It was you, Will, who gave America an inspiration she never had known before. Your philosophy, your thinking, your little homespun sayings were bred in the soil of this nation. You were America, Will, and you were my friend. So I know you will understand about me taking your spot tonight. They didn't know of anyone else to get. And I wanted so much to do it for you, to return a beautiful favor. So if you'll let my daughter Paula and me go on for you, Bill.
In dear old New York, it's remarkable, Barry. The names on the lamppost is unnecessary. You merely have to see the girls to know what street you're on. Fifth Avenue cuties and dear old Broadway girls, at tailor-made shoppers, the Avenue Acres are strictly all right, but they're different quite in the different parts of town.
In old New York, the peach crop's always fine. They're gay and fair, and on the square, the men of Manhattan for mine. You cannot see in gay Paris, in London or in Cork, the men you'll meet on any street in old New York.
Dance it, Paula.
May 21st, 1927. Yankee Stadium in New York City, where 40,000 rabid fight fans gathered to witness the Jim Maloney-Jack Sharkey fight, the winner of which was to meet Jack Dempsey.
Sharkey just counted Maloney's face with a series of hard rights and lefts, and he's backing Maloney into a corner, and he's belting away with 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, just like that. It looks as though, there goes the bell ending the round. Believe you me, folks, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Humphries has just stepped into the ring. This is very unusual for Joe. He's going to make an announcement in the midst of this fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, quiet, please. We just received a wireless report that a young man just took off in an airplane across the ocean alone. He's found somewhere over the open sea. And his name here is Charlie Lynn, boy. Now I'm going to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, and I don't think the two fighters will either, let's all be quiet for 1 minute and sort of give the boy a helping prayer. And those of you who forgot how, just be quiet anyway.
Twenty hours later, the Lone Eagle dropped out of the French sky to a memorable landing in Paris and placed his name beside those of Columbus, Magellan, Parry, and Byrd. And today, what interests America? What people fascinate her? What books thrill her? What is America thinking?
A more sober, more reflective America,
read such historical novels as Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell, a scene from which is dramatized for the first time on the air with Miss Constance Bennett as Scarlett O'Hara and Mr. Robert Montgomery as Rhett Butler. Gone with the Wind, the story of Scarlett O'Hara, daughter of a South whose traditions have been shattered by the Civil War. Scarlett O'Hara, coquette, vixen, ready to recruit every feminine wile to achieve her personal pleasures and stability, who married a man she did not love, though fascinated by Rhett Butler, charming scoundrel and blockade runner. Then, her husband is killed. On the evening of his burial, Scarlett sits alone in her room, alone with herself, rationalizing as her brain insists on tormenting her.
I want it quiet in the house. Not even any quarreling with Peter or Mary or Cookie. Nothing. And all because Frank is lying in his grave, and I killed him. No, I mustn't say that. But he did go out in the night for me. He was caught in that raid and shot. God will punish me for that. God will punish me for marrying Frank when he really loved Sue Ellen. I made him very unhappy and abort like a gentleman. But I really didn't make him entirely unhappy. I gave him our child, Ella. Oh, Frank, if you're only alive now, I could make up for it all. If I could only find someone who would let me put my head on his shoulder and cry. I wouldn't see Frank's face. That hurt, look. I wouldn't see it anymore.
Aunt Biddy, I want to talk with Scarlett.
But the child is lying down now, Captain Butler. He's right prostrated.
She'll see me. You tell her I'm going away tomorrow. Tell her it's terribly important.
Red, I'll be down directly. Let's put the mood on. No, it's a bit enough. Aunt Petey would be shocked. I'm coming down, Red.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Scarlett. I'm sorry I couldn't be at Frank's funeral.
I understand.
Will you pardon us, Aunt Petey?
Oh, certainly. I'll close the door as I go
out. Why did you come, Red?
I wanted to find out.
Find out what?
What the matter with you is.
You're a real callous person, Red. You're like me.
Come on, honey, what is it? Isn't it more than just old Frank dying?
Oh, Red, I'm so afraid. I'm afraid I'll die and go to hell.
You're pretty healthy, and maybe there isn't any hell.
But there is, Red. You know there is.
I know there is, but it's right here on Earth.
Well, I oughtn't to have married Frank. It was wrong. He was Sue Ellen's beau, and he loved her, not me. But I lied to him. I told him she was going to marry someone else. How could I have done it, Red?
Well, that's how you got Frank. I always wondered.
I made him do all sorts of things he didn't want to do. I was so mean to him. But I'm not really mean. My mother always said that I...
Your mother? I've often wondered what your mother was like.
Oh, Red. For the first time, I'm glad she's dead so she can't see me. She didn't raise me to be mean, Red. She'd rather I'd have her husband do this. And I still wanted to be like her in every way. And I'm not like her a bit. Not a bit. Mother died right after the Yankees went through. Red, you can't imagine. I get all cold when I think of it. I can see how everything is burned and still, and there's nothing to eat, you know. Oh, Red, in my dreams, I'm hungry again.
Go on.
I'm hungry, and my mind keeps saying, if I ever get out of this, I'll never, never be hungry again. And then the dream goes off into a gray mist, and I'm running so hard, my heart's about to burst, and something is chasing me, and I can't breathe, but I keep thinking, if I can just get there, I'll be safe, but I don't know where I'm trying to get to.
Honey, let's get to the bottom of this. You say if you had it to do over again, you'd do it differently. But would you? Think now, would you?
Oh, I don't know. It's all too mixed up.
Why don't you tell me the truth? Hasn't your conscience bothered you before this?
I didn't think much about conscience before. I guess I just reckoned God would understand.
But you don't credit God with understanding why you married Frank.
Red, how can you talk about God so when you don't even believe there is
you
one?
You believe in a God of wrath, and that's what's important at the moment. I'm surprised at you, Scarlett, for sprouting a conscience this late in life. Opportunists like you shouldn't have them.
What's an opportunist?
Person who takes advantage of opportunities.
Bad law?
It's always been held in bad taste by those who had the same opportunities and didn't take them. Now, I'll tell you why I came here this evening.
Why?
I'm going away.
Where?
To England, and I've got news.
What news?
My news is this. I still want you more than any woman I've ever seen. And now that Frank is gone, I thought you'd be interested to know it.
Red Butler, you're the most ill-bred man in the world coming here at a time like this with... with Frank Hobley, Crowe, and Miss Graves. If you had any decency...
I'm afraid you missed my point.
I don't miss anything. Let go of me and get out of here.
Listen, I'm asking you to marry me. Would you be convinced if I knelt down?
Oh.
I've always intended having you, Scarlett, since the first day I saw you at 12 Oaks. When you threw a vase and swore just to prove to me you weren't a lady.
You look so calm, just as if you were discussing the weather.
I bear my soul and you're suspicious. I'm going away for a long time, and if I wait till I return, I'm afraid you have married someone else with money. So I thought, why not me and my money? Really, Scarlett, I can't go on all my life waiting to catch you between husbands.
I don't think I'll ever marry again.
Oh, yes, you will. You were born to be married.
But, Red, I don't love you.
That's no drawback. Your love never loved Frank. Did you ever think of marrying just for the fun of it?
Don't talk like a fool. There's no fun being married.
Oh, I don't know. Why not try marrying a fine young man who has a bad reputation and a way with women?
Yeah, of course. You conceited me. This conversation has gone quite far now.
Come, Scarlett, say you'll marry me, or I'll stay around here and play a guitar under your window every night and sing at the top of my voice so you'll marry me to save your reputation.
But I don't want to marry anybody.
Scarlett O'Hara, you're a fool.
Oh, don't, Beth.
Scarlett.
Please.
Scarlett.
Let me go.
You're in my arms now. You're clinging to me as the only solid thing in a dizzy, swaying world. You've never felt like this before in your whole life.
Rick,
you've had this coming to you for years. None of the fools you've known have kissed you like this, have they? Gentlemen all, but what do they know about women? What do they know about you? I know you. Say yes, Scarlett. Say yes.
Yes.
You mean it? You don't want to take it back? Just why did you say yes? Look at me. Is it my money?
My Rick. What a question.
Look up and don't try to sweet-talk me.
You are in love with me, are you? Why should I be in love with you?
No. No, my dear. I'm not in love with you. No more than you are with me. And if I were, you'd be the last person I'd ever tell. God help the man who ever really loves you. You'd break his heart, my darling. All right. Let me know if you change your mind.
Oh. Well, aren't you going to kiss me goodbye?
Don't you think you've had enough kissing for one evening? To think of a modest, well-brought-up young woman. Well, I told you it would be fun, didn't I?
No. You're just impossible. And I don't care if you never come back.
But I will come back. I will. And you'll wait until I do.
Yes.
Years ago, a man bought a watch. It was a good watch, better than he ever expected to own, and at a lower price than he ever expected to pay. The man who bought the watch was Louis Lindemann of North Redwood, Minnesota. And the man he bought it from was Richard W. Sears, founder of Sears Roebuck and Company. Wherever you are, Louis Lindemann, will you please stand up? On Sears Roebuck and Company's Golden Jubilee, 50,000 Sears employees join in nationwide tribute to you, the first Sears customer. You and Sears Roebuck and Company know, Mr. Lindemann, how far this country has really come. Mr. Lindemann, what time is it? Is it nightfall or just the dawn? Tick, tick, tick. On the forward march of America, marching into a new day, grander, more beautiful than we have ever known before. Marching, marching to the music of the spheres. And the tick of a clock. What?
Thank you, Mr. Hampton.
Gone with the Wind, the forthcoming Selznick International production, was presented on tonight's broadcast by special permission of the Macmillan Company and Selznick International Pictures, the copyright owners. Robert Montgomery appeared by permission of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Constance Bennett with permission of 20th Century Fox. The song's Night in Manhattan is from the big broadcast of Paramount Picture. Varsity Greg from the production Good News. Next Thursday at this same time, Sears invites you to go back through the years again and to meet their guest stars, Admiral Richard E. Byrd, Helen Gleason of the Metropolitan Opera, and the Abbey children, Patience, Richard, and John, authors of the best-selling Around the World in 11 Years.